Good morning, one and all, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Arola, and for the first time in a very long time, Emma Viglin joins us, host of The Majority Report and the ESPN podcast. Emma, how's it going?
Oh, hello. Hello, John. I'm joining you from what, 5 feet away, 10 feet away on the other
10,
side of the studio?
12 feet. There's a bit of drywall, but other than that, we're close. This is about as close as I think either of us would prefer it to be. I think this is good.
No, it's good. This was a part of what I required when I said yes to doing the show when I was visiting LA. I just said, hey, look, I'll do the show with John, but I do not need to be near him because of the smell.
I just got so highly specific.
Anyway, everyone, if you feared that I did not have Emma back, that it was just AI, the fact that she has so viciously insulted me early should reassure you that it's the real deal. That is Emma. Emma has, for those of you who might have started watching the show in the past couple of years, Emma used to work at TYT for a number of years as both a host and a traveling reporter who would subject herself to the insane delusions and conspiracy theories of Trump fans at rallies. And since then has been, I was gonna say a big part of The Majority Report, but I just think the entirety of The Majority Report from my point of view, and you've been doing great things. So it's good to have you sort of return here for a little bit.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been fun to stay in touch and branch out myself on The Majority Report, which is a great show. I'll plug it. Everyone should check it out. But when I come back here, it's like I slip right into TYT mode once again, hanging out with you lot who, I joke, but I love John. He's the best, and it's good to be back.
It's good to have you back. By the way, during our first social break, I am going to reveal to Emma that in her absence, I have become something of a sports aficionado. We will see if she agrees at all with that characterization I just made of myself. So anyway,
oh my gosh, that is that is an incredible development.
I have several qualifications that I'm gonna run past you. We'll see if you accept them. But anyway, before all that, we've got so much that we're gonna be talking about, everybody. It was a big day in the news. It was a particularly big day in the Rudy Giuliani category of the news. Rudy Giuliani is being accused of everything, every bad thing. He did all of the things. And so we're gonna be breaking it down. And that's just to get us started. After that, we've got political violence. We've got Ron DeSantis making Tucker Carlson's laugh look like it came out of an actual human being by comparison. And then if you stick around for the aftermath, and so for those of you on the linear platforms that are on the podcast, you might not know that we do extra content live every day that you can go to our YouTube channel to watch. We've got a viral video appearing to show the weaponization of tears. We've got Martha Stewart being attacked for posing in a swimsuit, and we've been talking a lot about child labor on the show the past couple of months. Is there a form of child labor that has been very normalized over the past decade or so that they deserve to be compensated more for? We're gonna debate it coming up in just a bit. But before all of that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream so the people know we're live, that would be great. They could come join us in the conversation. And if you'd like to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, Em and I will respond as we go. And particularly good, insightful, witty comments might earn you a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So get those comments in and Emma and I will evaluate as we go. But with all that said, Emma, are you ready to start the show?
Oh yeah, baby, let's do it.
Let's do it, okay. Let's jump into, oh God, this. A woman has made some shocking allegations against Rudy Giuliani, of course, notably former mayor of New York, former lawyer to Donald Trump, former guy melting on camera. And they are the most serious, distressing, disturbing sorts of allegations. This is Noelle Dunphy. She says that she was hired to work as his business development director in 2019. And that was just the beginning. She claims that she has audio recordings of several interactions, among them alcohol-drenched rants that included sexist, racist, and anti-Semitic remarks. She alleges that Giuliani assaulted and harassed her, forced her to work in a deplorable work environment in secret, and robbed her of the pay that she was owed. And that's just the beginning. We're gonna dive into a lot of these allegations. The top line though is accusations of sexual assault, battery, gender discrimination, and harassment, fostering a hostile work environment, retaliation, breach of contract, and violations of state labor laws. Additionally, She says that she was at the point when she was hired by Giuliani, an emotionally vulnerable domestic violence victim. And as you will see, Rudy Giuliani seemed very aware of that and seemed to very much relish it, according to her allegations. So let's jump into some of the most individually serious. She says Giuliani had sex with her when she was too drunk to consent shortly after he hired her, on an evening when he required she stay over in a private guest suite at his Upper East Side apartment. Giuliani demanded she drink scotch with him, then barged into her suite as she emerged from the shower, saying he sat on the bed and pulled down his pants. He grabbed her and forced her to give him oral sex, she said, during which, quote, Giuliani smacked Miss Dunphy in the face and then told her that the smack was cute. And that, which happened right after she was hired, was the beginning of a long string of both sets of harassment as well as assault. She says he made clear that satisfying his sexual demands, which came virtually anytime, anywhere, was an absolute requirement of her employment and of his legal representation. So we're gonna get into a ton more details so that you can understand the experience she is saying that she had. But Emma, right off the bat, he's obviously a very high profile guy, both politically in terms of his lingering attachment to Donald Trump. What do you make of all this?
I mean, I'm not surprised, obviously. We saw that footage of him. What was it in the Sacha Baron Cohen, This Is America Showtime show where
Oh, it was a Borat 2.
Oh, okay. Either one. One of the Sacha Baron Cohen pictures showed Rudy Giuliani essentially potentially getting himself ready for a sexual act. And if it was consensual, that would be one thing. But the guy just looks like a lecherous goblin, and we know how improper he is behind the scenes. I mean, even in his old age, he was on with, one of the weird Steve Bannon shows last week, I believe, bragging about how when he was running for mayor, he essentially lied to a bunch of different Latino voters through mailers and things like that to scare them away from the polls with the threat of deportation. And he wasn't confessing, he was bragging on that front. The guy's despicable on every single level and slimy as hell. So I'm not surprised by this, even though the details of it, they get more and more shocking as you continue to go through and read about them.
Yeah, I'm glad that you remind us of that. We covered that at the time, and there's no shame, there's no remorse. He loves the fact that he thinks he's killing it. He's doing a great job. I mean, to almost everyone else in the country, he's a shell of a man. He's barely human at this point, but he thinks that he's won. And you brought up the Borat 2 thing. So considering that it was a Borat movie, I always wondered, like, to what extent was he really doing it, or was it clever editing and stuff? But while these are, again, these are just allegations, we don't have any proof of any of this just yet, it really does make me think, no, he really thought that he was going to have something going on with Maria Bakalova in that clip. Like,
oh yeah,
just absolutely gross.
And just another point here, the fact that Republicans like this and powerful men like this treat their female employees with this kind of implicit ownership, complete disregard for their humanity and their agency, that should be instructive for people who want to look at the Republican Party and their politics and how they view power and labor more generally, because they are the party of capitalist bosses. They want to be able to lord over everybody else and exert their power and influence on them. And in many cases, you see that this happens with sexual harassment, sexual violence, etc. So this is not something that is distinct from their political ideology. It's actually the continuation of it.
Yeah, that's a great point. And when something like this comes out, who on the right is supposed to care? Like, all of the men, the Republican men who are politicians or media figures, all want exactly the same setup with their female employees, and they think that female employees are only there for this sort of setup. The men who support those politicians and watch those shows desperately wish that they had direct ownership over their own women. They pine for those times. And a lot of the women have been beaten down to think that you're not supposed to complain about any of this, that that's the natural order of things, it's the natural hierarchy and everything. It's like, this is absolutely disgusting. And virtually every one of these Republicans, as we'll get into in the details, has been warning against this sort of predation But in practice, they don't actually care with individual instances. They care when it's sort of a mythical boogeyman that they can throw onto the Democrats or Jewish billionaires or something. But when there's a specific instance of it, suddenly they don't seem to care so much. Certainly not if it's a woman making the allegations. Noelle Dunphy's lawsuit against Rudy Giuliani clocks in at 70 pages, and it is filled with the most disgusting sorts of anecdotes and quotes from her. So we're gonna run through some of this. She says he drank copious amounts of alcohol, took Viagra constantly. He was in fact rarely sober around her. Quote, often demanded that she work naked in a bikini or in short shorts with an American flag on them that he bought for her. He often called her from his bed where he was visibly touching himself under a white sheet. He often demanded oral sex while he took phone calls on speakerphone from high profile friends and clients, including President Trump. Giuliani told Ms. Dunphy that he enjoyed engaging in this conduct while on the telephone because it made him feel like Bill Clinton. You know, the guy that him and Trump and all of them say was so terrible. It was terrible what he did. They just desperately want to do the things that he did and feel like he felt. They fantasize about acting out the activities of this guy that they say that they're against. But I'm gonna throw one more detail out there before you weigh in, Emma. She says, quote, or he said, she says that he said, quote, I think of you as my daughter. And he said this while engaging in sexual contact with her, and then said, is that weird? Yes. Yes, I'm not involved in this case. I just want to weigh in and make clear that yes, that is deeply weird. Especially since he has a daughter. Not a good relationship with her. We can speculate as to why exactly. And now we have some more data with which to speculate. But Emma, what do you think?
Oh yeah, he also has a strained relationship with one of his sons too, I think. In his personal life, it's relevant in this case. He has had multiple wives, he's had affairs, and it seems like he is not the best guy. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that. And it also seems to be contagious between him and his disgusting brother's bromance with Donald Trump that they have somewhat sexual thoughts about their daughter. These are the people, the party that is so obsessed with groomers and pedophilia on the left, which they essentially have deemed all LGBTQ people just existing and saying, hey, I exist. That's grooming, apparently. So it's all projection. We know this, but when you see the gory details like this, man, does it shine a light on how absurd their posture is on that front?
Yeah, well, actually, why don't we throw a little bit more evidence on the whole grooming thing? Mm. So among the women, she describes basically his behavior as grooming, not only with her, but with other people. He generally thought giving jobs and giving promotions was a tool to get sex. She says one of the women that he allegedly groomed was Giuliani Company's communications director, Christiane Allen, who was hired by Giuliani when she was 19. Giuliani allegedly told Dunphy that he hired Allen, who was more than 50 years his junior, because he had, quote, a certain sexual attraction to her. He then allegedly confessed to having kissed her on the lips, though he assured Dunphy that they did not consummate the relationship. And that is just, he's been in public life for decades and decades and decades. These are just allegations, of course, we have to lay that out repeatedly, but are we supposed to believe that if these allegations are true, that he just started doing this when he was 85? He was the mayor. He had the ability to make or break careers for decades. And this is how he acts. By the way, also, and this is gonna tie back to Noelle Dunphy talked about, being a victim of prior abuse, being emotionally vulnerable because of that. Ms. Dunphy, quote, would come to understand that Giuliani was aroused by discussing Ms. Dunphy's sexual history and violent relationships. That's what she said. He would talk to her about the past times that she had been abused and assaulted because he got off on it. That is the allegation. By the way, some of you might be wondering, well, why then in this case, why did she continue working for him? Well, she says she continued to work despite being, quote, shocked and saddened by what had happened, because she feared losing the $1 million salary he had promised, as well as free legal representation he had also agreed to give her. So the money was dangled over her head to get her to comply and not report him for any of this. In the end, he apparently paid her $12,000. She is now seeking $10 million in damages. And of course, they've denied it. They had put out statements saying that Giuliani's lifetime of public service speaks for itself. I will leave it to our individual viewers to think back on what they know of Giuliani historically and say what that speaks to when it comes to him. But what do you think?
I mean, I'm hard pressed to think of a more despicable human being just off the top of my head, which means he'll probably live to like 115. He has the Henry Kissinger syndrome or something like that. But this, there is a real class of powerful people, and they tilt much more towards the Republican side of things, that genuinely want to live their own Mad Men-esque fantasy, where, except for the part, you know, as the story progresses, where the women begin to get liberated and all that kind of thing, but where they are the guys in the room that are, they're in smoke-filled rooms, they're drinking brown liquor. They're doing whatever they want, and the world is their oyster, and they resent any effort for there to be accountability. And Rudy Giuliani is a prime example of it. They're all swimming in that same toxic pool over there in Trump land.
Exactly. Yeah. And having every reason to believe that that will be okay. And in fact, perhaps wanting to get involved in that pool because they know of how toxic it is. What they're allowed to get away with. That said, behind the scenes, why don't we jump to graphic 11? Because we need to jump into this last aspect of this. While Noel Dunphy has accused Rudy Giuliani of quite a bit when it comes to their relationship, sexual harassment, sexual assault, there is a broader issue that might potentially bring a national focus, perhaps congressional oversight, because he is also being alleged to have engaged in, or at least be interested in engaging in, a, you know, like a selling influence scheme of the highest order. She says that Giuliani asked her if she knew anyone in need of a pardon, telling her that he was selling pardons for $2 million. Which he and President Trump would split. He told Ms. Dunphy that she could refer individuals seeking pardons to him so long as they did not go through the normal channels of the Office of the Pardon Attorney, because correspondence going to that office would be subject to disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act. And that would really put the kibosh on the whole us making $2 million thing. So representatives for Trump and for Dunphy have not responded to requests for comment on this particular part of the story. We know that Donald Trump gave out pardons in a very self-interested fashion. He gave it to people who did his bidding, who did not, you know, reveal too much about him during their own legal troubles. So I don't find it that hard to believe that they would sell these. He's a really petty guy. He sells baseball cards for money online right now. That's what Trump is doing. The only part of this story that I don't buy, Emma, and feel free to disagree, is how the hell is Rudy, as dumb and as, you know, addled of mind as he is, how the hell did he think Trump was gonna give him $1 million for those?
I know, no, Rudy, why? Rudy, you gotta cover it. I mean, this is what happens. You can see it in Michael Cohen. He does the upfront payment and then I pay him back. It's that simple. I mean, like that, but so it's, this is just even more self-dealing than we already knew his pardon process to be. I am not shocked by this at all. Everything was for sale under the Trump administration. And why is Rudy Giuliani involved in this process at all? He was his personal lawyer. He was not a part of official channels, or shouldn't have been, in the White House, but everything was pay to play. It's like, again, the guy ran on Drain the Swamp and they're selling pardons. Could you think of anything more swampy? And this is, like, again, all alleged, but I would not be shocked, because this is also how Republican channels operate. We saw this in the context of the Clarence Thomas story, where Leonard Leo funneled money through back channels, through Kellyanne Conway, who was the bag woman, to Ginny Thomas, and they didn't disclose it, but they wanted something out of it. And they're very good at making, sending money to people who do their bidding and where it's in their interest to do so, and making it so that there is no paper trail. There's way more stories of this than we probably even know.
I definitely. Yeah. Yeah, he ran and drained the swamp and he's selling swamp water like it's bath water online. Like that's what he's doing. By the way, also, you know, I find it so easy to believe for Donald Trump that he would do something like this, that Rudy Giuliani, like all of this is just a means to money. Like that's all that it is. But let's also bear in mind, this is hardly the first presidency where there's been serious concerns about the pardon power being used for personal profit. Mm-hmm. Like there needs to be way more oversight over pardons for both, you know, crypto fascists, but also all of the other presidents too. It is too much individual power that can help people weigh too much for there not to be a little bit more oversight. But anyway, we'll see if there's an investigation of this. Obviously, we'll be following Noel Dunphy's trial if it goes to trial as we go forward. With that said, we do need to take our first break of the hour, everyone. So get your comments in. When we come back, we're going to be talking about an attack on staffers of a congressperson's office and Ron DeSantis's latest bid to draw some attention, make himself look good. We'll evaluate it after this. Okay, everyone, during the social break, I ran two of my sports credentials past our resident sports expert for the day, Emma Viglin, but I have left the biggest and most controversial one for the next social break, so everyone stay tuned. Everyone in the audience knows exactly what I'm talking about and is laughing at me, I'm sure. But anyway, why don't we move on to what's going on? Ron DeSantis basically has one sales pitch to Republican voters. He's gonna take on the woke. That's all he's got. And soon Trump is going to eat his lunch when it comes to that. But for now, that's what he's got. And he's continuing it. He's got this new bill as part of his effort to fight diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in colleges and universities in Florida. And so he signed this measure aimed at prohibiting them from spending money on these sorts of programs, saying, if you look at the way this has actually been implemented across the country, DEI is better viewed as standing for discrimination, exclusion, and indoctrination.
Whoa.
Am I clever? Do you love me? Why don't you love me? But anyway, along the way, during his whole try hard thing that he's doing there, he's doing a lot of damage. And so let's break down the damage. This is the damage report after all. Under the new law, Florida's public colleges are prohibited from spending state or federal money on DEI efforts. These programs often assist colleges in increasing student and faculty diversity, which can apply to race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religion, and socioeconomic status. The law also forbids public colleges from offering general education courses, which are part of the required curriculum for all college students that, quote, distort significant historical events, teach, quote, identity politics, or are based on theories that systemic racism, sexism, oppression, or privilege are inherent in the institutions of the United States and were created to maintain social, political, or economic inequities. So the basic idea is if you want to do a course where you focus on what slavery really was, why the Civil War really happened, how we got to the Civil Rights Movement, all that, that will be giving a distorted accounting of historical events. But if you imply that like it wasn't really that bad, then that's apparently fine. They use this weaselly vague language, so there's nothing for a judge to really rule on. It's purely ideological. What distorts it? The whole point of critical race theory or whatever is to have a better, more grounded in reality accounting of what actually happened. They're just defining it away as distorting history. They would say, the academics, that they are having to deal with the fact that our education system has always distorted history and it's finally time for an accounting for it. But when he's chosen the judges and when he's chosen the oversight boards, it's gonna come down to whatever his cronies want. Emma, what do you think?
The right loves to naturalize things that already exist and pretend that they were created by God in some way. I mean, it's the way fundamentalists think, but that includes the teaching of history, I guess, up until the 1960s, where they'd like to return it to, or we've gone way too far, let's return to the factual history. We have never, ever had a true 100% factual recounting of history. It's been impossible. I covered this last week, but the Washington Post spoke to a researcher named Jonathan Eag, who went to the Duke University archives and found the transcripts of Martin Luther King's interview with author Alex Haley for Playboy. And the transcripts completely contradict the quotes that were given to Playboy that were attributed to King, which were very critical of Malcolm X. What he actually said was entirely different. And those quotes had been, and this is just one of many examples, but those quotes had been used, and I remember reading about them as a kid, to cite the vast differences and acrimonious relationship between the two activists, when in reality they were both radicals. One was a Christian radical, the other was a Muslim radical. They had a little bit of differing philosophies, but the division between the two has been a part of like the Santa Clausification of Martin Luther King, as opposed to actually making it clear that no, his edges were sharp. Activism was tough brutal at times, and both King and Malcolm X were engaged in that. That's just one example of how our history has been completely distorted up to this point in favor of narratives that serve capitalism, that serve patriarchy, and that of course serve white supremacy. And in that instance, that was a way to make King seem not as scary as he was when, you know, he died, he had a disapproval rating that was astronomical. So that's just an example that I'm citing there, but all of our history is like that. It's tilted to deify our founding fathers as if they're saints, as if they're high priests in this country. It speaks about our institutions in this country in this lofty way, which hasn't necessarily, of course, been the case for marginalized communities. We completely whitewash indigenous history in this country. So what these diversity, equity, inclusion, or CRT programs are trying to do is marginally correct that record. And that is such a threat to reactionary conservatives like Ron DeSantis that of course we see this kind of crap.
And also, so like the way that they in Florida, especially the conservatives, talk about schools, it betrays this like this expansion of the concept of propaganda that's existed in the media to schools in such a specific way, where they will continually attack Democrats or bisexual second grade teachers of propagandizing to kids, with propaganda being defined as only anything that might lead to the kids not being conservative, but also a thing that is said, in the same way that the media can be biased by the things that they say. Don't focus on how propaganda can work in that controlling what is said and what isn't said can be way more important. The media not covering a topic can be way more corrosive than the way that it covers certain topics.
Exactly.
And in the same way in schools, yeah, saying a thing is propaganda, legally barring the teaching of subjects is also a propaganda. That's what you're doing. You are attempting to control the education and ideological development of an entire generation. That's all that this is. And it's convenient for them.
Of course. And also, I want to add that this is a way to largely undercut education broadly, particularly public education. The right is terrified of institutions like, whether it's Medicare, Social Security, or programs like just public school being essentially staples for the American people. And then they can be like, oh, I'm gonna rely on the state. We should have more government, right? We should have more of these kinds of things. And so this is a way for them to go after public education in a racist way, but they are hamstringing teachers and making it professors and making it impossible for them to do their jobs in this way, making it so onerous that it is a multi-pronged attack, but one of the prongs is certainly attacking education.
And they're treating, in that way, they're treating education just like the government, where, and you might think, well, making it so that a thing can't function, well, that hurts everyone equally because it can't do what the libs want, but it can't do what the conservatives want. No, they don't want anything to be done. If schools don't work, that's fine. Someone who was quoting George Carlin is saying they only want us to be smart enough to operate the machines. They don't care if it results in the kids being stupider. And if the government grinds to a halt, well, then it can't pass laws that hurt the wealthy who are in charge. So again, it's one of the most important things that I try to stress on the show is there is virtually nothing about politics that is actually symmetrical. It is inherently asymmetrical. Something being done that hurts both sides almost never hurts both sides equally. So bear that in mind. That said, I do want to get ahead to the second part of this. So, I want to briefly mention though, we don't have this graphic. I just want to let you know, when it comes to the DEI stuff, there was this reallocation of funds that DeSantis was in charge of that apparently went to, and we're just getting the beginnings of this from the lever, that went to a bunch of extremely underperforming financial institutions, and it's being portrayed as payback for donations. Like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make fiscal sense for the Florida government to have gone with these banks because they underperformed other ones. We're just at the beginnings of understanding what that might be about. So I just want to let you know that this DEI thing is not necessarily just a culture war thing. It also could have a massive financial corruption aspect to it, but we'll see what happens as we go. That said, I want to turn to a little bit of a broader topic about Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump, since I only have Emma for today. But let's start off with this video.
That was nice. How much is that worth?
Good morning, you're talking about that.
Even Tucker Carlson is watching that and thinking, that's not how humans laugh. Look, Ron DeSantis has been criticized a lot, increasingly so, for having none of that je ne sais quoi that makes a politician a charismatic or likable or human being. He's this weird, angry, irritable little goblin. That's what he is.
Meatball. He's a little meatball.
He's a little mean meatball.
Yeah.
And people don't like him when they talk to him. They find him off-putting. Now, he has tried to get out in front of that a little bit by not selling himself on being a likable person or a good person or a cool person or a person. Just, I'm the person who's going to attack people that you hate even more than you hate me. The question, though, is that going to get him through this primary if he runs? Because what he gives is owning the libs. But Ron DeSantis can't, in his wildest dreams, own the libs more than Donald Trump can own the libs from the point of view of a right winger. So, and Trump has charisma, people say. I've never bought it, but
I say,
people say it. Emma says it.
It's so true. Emma, you don't need to like him. I despise him, but he has a you
seem to like him.
You can't see. It baffles me that you can't see when he says Ron DeSanctimonious or Meatball Ron. That doesn't make you laugh at all. Not
DeSanctimonious. Also, everyone, I want you to bear in mind in this little debate we're having right now. Do you have any idea how many Trump rallies Emma's been to, and you think she's unbiased? Anyway, I just want to open it up to Ron DeSantis versus Trump. Is he even going to run? If he runs, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying this on the Majority Report for months now, so I'll give myself a little pat on the back. I said this guy doesn't have it. And that might have been like 6 or 8 months ago. I just got this sense that he really is a one-trick pony, and he's emptying the clip too quickly with the, I think I said this in reference to the Martha's Vineyard migrant story, where he's just so anxiously vomiting out culture war nonsense, this DEI law as well, where it's like, okay, but what else do you have up your sleeve here, buddy? Because we've seen this happen before. We've seen governors get all of this praise, saying they'll be well funded, they'll be the front runner, Scott Walker, Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, go down the list. They're going to be the nominee most likely. And then they just completely fall apart because they don't have the national appeal that they think they do. DeSantis has one trick right now. It's appealing to culture warriors in the state of Florida and then hoping that right-wing media picks it up. But while Donald Trump was in East Palestine handing out McDonald's, which, whatever, it's a gimmick, but it's good politics. Ron DeSantis was speaking to police unions and Club for Growth donors in Chicago and New York and Philly. At least that's where the police unions were. That was around the same time. And that's when I was like, all right, this is not happening. I mean, he does not understand the Republican base. The Republican establishment wants to will him into existence because they think he's Trump without the baggage. He can speak to the culture war stuff. He can be a racist and a homophobe, but he's not Trump. He went to Ivy League schools. He was in Congress. He'll go to Club for Growth things. We can play ball with him. Trump's too much of a wild card, and he'll probably lose a general election. That's what they think. The donors can't will something into existence if it's not connecting with people, and polling seems to indicate it. And part of that is because DeSantis hasn't officially announced yet, and he's just letting Trump pummel him and not responding.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, that you can't force voters to choose him. And right now I think, man, Trump's the presumptive nominee, and it's by a long shot.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned the polling. Let's just briefly show.
Or the more likely nominee, I should say. Presumptive nominees, a little bit. I'm skipping ahead a little bit too much. But
more
anyway.
More likely.
Yes.
So here's Kentucky. On the left, you have May, and on the right, you have April. DeSantis has lost 9 points in a month. And as was wisely noted on Succession, if it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to happen in Kentucky. And now Ron DeSantis is polling at like slightly better than Conor Roy levels, like a little bit better. Maybe he could get an ambassadorship if he drops out at just the right time. But it's not looking great, and you can see the overall polls there. He's doing a little bit better overall, but he needs to run. Look, when he announces, he'll get a boost or whatever, and he'll start attacking more. That's theoretically the only way that he can catch up. I also think there's no chance that that works for him. There's no way that he engages in an active fight with Trump that doesn't hurt him way more than it hurts Trump. I think him hiding, like just poking his head up above the ground to like look at the race is the only thing that's saving him from being nuked at this point. So,
but then
I don't
that
know.
Looks so
I think
weak.
He's doomed.
But then it looks weak too. So he's in a no-win situation, which is fun to watch.
He looks weak now, but that's not as bad as when he gets on the debate stage with Trump and Trump calls him a little girl and he breaks down in tears and pees his khakis. Like that's gonna look weaker.
I can't wait for that. I gotta be honest with you.
Yeah, few of us can recover from that, let me tell you. Anyway, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. Maybe we can talk again at some point during the race. Okay, with that said, we are gonna go to our next break. Right before we go to our next break though, I want to shout out my team behind the scenes, because you all wouldn't know this because they're so good at their job and so smooth. When we came back from our last social break, I scrolled down too far and launched immediately into the block that was not the next block. And they just smoothly went to everything. And I didn't realize it until like 5 minutes ago. So anyway, we're gonna take a break, but they're great at their job and they deserve recognition. We'll see you in a few. Okay, I would like to make further apologies to my team because I didn't clarify in that break what we're gonna do. So I think what we're gonna do is B and then D, I think, okay? So why don't we launch into B here. Two members of the staff of Representative Jerry Connolly were hospitalized just yesterday after an assailant attacked them with a baseball bat, according to the Virginia congressman, as well as law enforcement. And since then, more details have come out about the attacker, the situation, what we think possibly could have been the motivation. We're gonna jump into all that. 49-year-old Fairfax arraigned earlier today by video hookup. Charges include aggravated wounding and malicious aggravated wounding for the baseball bat attack. They also include a misdemeanor hate crime charge and a felony count of destroying property. The hate crime charge might be linked to the fact that supposedly he had asked if someone was white before launching the attack. That potentially is the explanation for that. Not entirely sure. But the father of the suspect told the Washington Post his son was diagnosed with schizophrenia and has dealt with mental illness since his late teens. He told the Post that he had been trying to pursue mental health care for his son, but has suffered a number of difficulties in that. Representative Connolly says that both members of my team were transferred to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Right now, our focus is on ensuring they're receiving the care that they need. And he went on to say, and this is another one of the updates, I have no reason to believe that his motivation, the attacker, was politically motivated. But it is possible that the sort of toxic political environment we all live in, you know, set him off. And I would just hope all of us could take a little time off to be careful about what we say and how we say it. By the way, one of the those who were attacked is an intern who was on her first day on the job. Oh, I don't know why that makes it worse, but it feels like it makes it worse. There's no better or worse in this situation. It's all bad. But anyway, it appears at this point that they're at least saying it was not a political attack. Very responsible of Jerry Connolly's office to do that. We know how, you know, down in Florida, they took what appeared to be just a random act of violence and tried to pretend that it was an Antifa war on Republicans or something. So I like that they're being responsible and pacing this, I think, appropriately. Emma, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we have to be incredibly careful when covering some of these stories because there's a knee-jerk reaction to think, okay, there's gonna be some motivation behind this that is political. And sometimes it's not the case. Sometimes it's just the fact that we live in a incredibly cruel, callous society that has decided we should privatize healthcare in this country, that we should privatize our housing system so much that there are people who don't have the ability to afford to live indoors, they're unhoused. And at least I can see that in urban centers like New York, it creates an incredibly horrific mental health crisis situation where people are just left to die. But if Republicans talk about this in the wake of mass shootings, mental health, that's what we need to deal with, not guns, of course. But they don't actually want to deal with mental health. What would help mental health in this country is not just awareness, it would be Medicare for all, socialized healthcare, providing that for people so they can see counseling, get medication. When they might have a barrier to entry, most likely they do if they're not able to get care, that is the cost. And these kinds of things are gonna happen frequently in our society because that's what we've constructed here.
Yeah. Minor knee-jerk reaction would have been that it's some sort of attack because we've seen multiple attacks like this on the representatives, their families, their staffers recently. I mean, everybody seems to have forgotten the devastating attack on the Pelosi's, you know, not that many months ago, that was immediately turned into just a hilarious joke by the right. They were dressing up for Halloween as the person who tried to murder Nancy Pelosi and her husband. But this doesn't appear to be one of those cases. I will say, though, on the political side, we often hear in the wake of mass shootings, what is the point of banning a gun? Because if they don't have a gun, then they'll just get a hammer, or they'll get a knife, or maybe they'll get a baseball bat. Well, in this case, while I can only imagine how horrifying someone attacking you with a baseball bat is, they are hospitalized, it's devastating, they might be injured or influenced by that for the rest of their life, they are alive. If this guy had had an AR-15 instead of the baseball bat, do we think that they would be alive? Do we think that other people in the area would be alive? Which do we think the deranged attacker would have preferred to have had? Because we're supposed to believe that, hey, whatever, you just take what you get, it's all the same, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. In this case, it appears to have mattered, and people's lives might have been saved by the fact that this guy did not have access to a gun like that. A Texas woman was killed by her boyfriend, apparently after getting an abortion out of state that he didn't want her to get. So she returned from the trip, I believe, to Colorado. He confronted her and then shot her.
Great. And
maybe that would have, just devastating. It's the worst story. Maybe it would have happened no matter what. I don't know. But maybe if she hadn't had to take a trip out of state, maybe he would have never found out about it. I have no idea. This is just speculation. It's the grossest speculation. But we have a country with people like this, and we have politicians who are definitely more on their side than on ours.
Yeah, I mean, that is why, as you say, John, it just is so important that we preserve access to birth control methods, which include the morning after pill and the abortion pill, that thankfully is still at least temporarily legal because of the Supreme Court's shadow docket after that insane Kaczmarek ruling. But when right wingers and theocrats on their side go after abortion access, it is because they're not going after condoms, right? They're not going after the method of birth control that the man has control over, because it's the man's choice whether he's going to impregnate the person who can get pregnant, the woman, etc. That's his godly choice, and she has to be the vessel for that child. And that is what God would have wanted. I mean, that's really what they think like. They're first gonna come after abortion, then they'll come after the morning after pill, then they'll come after birth control, they'll come after IUDs, that's already being discussed right now. Yeah. They'll come after every method that the woman has agency over. And it's just gonna happen more often that you have this kind of violence because they're emboldened by state violence, and personal violence comes down from that. And what we're seeing throughout the country is state violence against people who can get pregnant and people who need abortions. So Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like in so many other cases, if you want to believe that he was definitely going to kill her no matter what, you believe that he was going to beat her to death with his bare hands right there. Look, I'm not saying you don't have any evidence to believe that. Men do that all the time in America. But it sure is easier with like snap judgment to pull out a gun and shoot someone. Like I say all the time, they say guns make us safer. I say the gun is the only thing that made this a deadly incident. And by the way, Grumpy Cat pointed this out. It apparently just happened, or the update just happened. A 12-year-old used an AR-15 to kill a Sonic employee in the Dallas area while the employee was arguing with someone else. And again, if the 12-year-old hadn't had the AR-15, person would be alive. Nobody thinks the 12-year-old is gonna launch himself through the window and into the Sonic and then kill the person. Like Wolverine, the gun being there is what made it a dangerous situation. Anyway, I love it when all of you keep us, you know, updated on breaking news as it happens. So to recognize that, Grumpy Cat, assuming you haven't already gotten a Blue Apron gift card, I would like to give you one. If you'd like to email rewards@turt.com, send your first and last name as well as your handle. They will set you up on that. And that said, we're going to jump into our final story of the hour. Elon Musk appears to be having a rough time. How do I know that? Well, that's the only plausible explanation I can come up with for why you would tweet, "Soros reminds me of Magneto." George Soros reminds him of Magneto.
All right,
anybody knows
seen
anything
X-Men.
About the X-Men?
I haven't seen X-Men. I've heard.
Well,
great
don't
things.
Worry. Yes. Well, I feel weird going to Bryan Cranston to explain the significance of that comparison. Bryan Cranston, who apparently is a subscriber to Elon Musk on Twitter, but says, fun fact, Magneto's experiences during the Holocaust as a survivor shaped his perspective as well as his depth and empathy. Soros, also a Holocaust survivor, gets attacked nonstop for his good intentions, which some Americans think are bad merely because blah, 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 he goes on from there. To which Elon Musk, genius amongst us, replies, "You assume they are good intentions. They are not. He wants to erode the very fabric of civilization. Soros hates humanity."
But I am not political. I am just saying what everybody wants us to say. I'm just speaking truth here. Yeah, no, but he's just
that's
such
pretty
a plan.
Good, actually. I yeah. haven't heard your Elon Musk. I haven't heard anyone's Elon Musk. That's now the leader. Anyway, why does he think that? Well, I don't know. Elon Musk is a right winger and they're all contractually obligated to hate George Soros and other global elites.
Yeah, we get it. Just say Jews. Just say Jews, Jewish. Elon. Honestly, I would respect you more if you just said Jews.
Yeah. But there might be a more personal reason why he's got George Soros on his mind. Apparently, George Soros's fund dumped its entire Tesla stake in the first quarter, cashing out on the EV maker's 2023 rebound. Maybe that's the issue, actually,
might
with
be.
George Soros. Not that he has some sort of like just opposition to the fabric of civilization. Like what? Like if you want to make the case that George Soros is trying to like rig the tax code or something, that's understandable. We understand that as a motivation. You want to be wealthier. You want more power. You want more, I don't know, a harem of cultists or whatever. These are understandable. You hate the fabric of civilization is what you say to appeal to conspiracy theorists who are curious about what's going on, but not to the extent that they want specifics or facts
yeah.
or have to actually go through difficult things.
Elon does not have an ideological, Elon doesn't have an ideological opposition to billionaire donations to politics. So let's be real here. He is just saying George Soros, not the Mercers, not the Koch brothers, not anyone on the right, because he wants to appeal to the right and their conspiracy about Soros, which is a dog whistle for Jewish people. Even though I'm against billionaire donations, I don't single one guy out. So the reason that they do that, obviously, is to appeal to the right. And Elon, that's the cesspool he's created in his acquisition of Twitter.
100%. Okay, everybody, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you, those of you in the linear platforms listening on the podcast. But there's more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. Emma and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.